Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 35. Paul Reps, Pathway to the Marrow. Got the idea for the show and then discovered that Paul Reps was born 1895, just like John Cage, Bucky Fuller. But they're all kind of similar in their originality. Reps was an American artist, poet, and author. He is best known for his unorthodox haiku-inspired poetry that was published from 1939 onwards. He is considered one of America's first haiku poets. In association with his writing, Reps was also a well-received artist. Many of his books have artwork influenced by Zen Buddhism displayed in association with his writings. Reps was widely traveled and spent a large amount of his time in Asia. In Japan, his art was widely accepted and he often went there in associations with the displays of his artwork in galleries and to reaffirm his Buddhist understanding. In the later years of his life, Reps made his home on the island of Maui in Hawaii. Photos on the website paulreps.com show him in his elder years, and he looks quite endearing, like a grandfather or an uncle. This is your host, Monk, and thank you for listening. Some of Paul Reps' work was highlighted in the Zen There, Done That audio show a while back. His book, Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, a collection of Zen and pre-Zen writings compiled by him and Nyogen Senzaki. We will get to that one. First, a little biography on the website, paulreps.com. This is a piece called A Remembrance by Bennett Wong and Jock McKean. Reps was a phenomenon. Born in Iowa, he went to the Orient as a young man in the early 1900s and studied with the teachers of Asia. Gradually, he assimilated the wisdom of the East and began to distribute it to the West in a most unique fashion. He published Zen Flesh, Zen Bones in 1939, then went on to develop his ideas about self-expression, believing that there were too many words. He would toss off picture poems, simple childlike line drawings, and penetrating haiku-like epigrams. Reps was a wanderer with no fixed roots. He regarded the planet as his home. In his lifelong movements over the earth, he would stay in various places, then mysteriously move on. In each of these places, as far separated as Norway, Japan, India, the U.S., and Canada, he had a family of friends who looked out for him, loved him, and grew by the grace of his insightful teachings. His final day, as he lay in relaxed unconsciousness, reps his hands, wondrously formed the mudra of oneness, a yogic posture representing peace. Each index finger touched the tip of the adjacent thumb. One of his attending nurses noticed this. "What does this mean?" she asked. "We take it to mean that Reps's essential being was and is in touch with the cosmic harmony, and as he surrendered to his next lesson, he adopted the position of worship that he had shown throughout his life. As he slipped into death, he surrendered it in the same way that he had always encouraged others. In Reps's words, which he often said so humbly to others, thank you for your life." And there's more about him on the website, which has little inscriptions. You are your own fortune cookie and Reps Play Shop. That was actually a phrase I given to my own writing process instead of workshop, called a play shop. And there's a timeline, others of his books and picture poems, some of his picture poems online. Those are certainly worth looking at. I'm gonna read some of the haiku-like poems, but most of them are complemented with the Chinese brush calligraphy, and it's not the formal Chinese brush calligraphy. It's spontaneous and avant-garde. He has flowers. He'll write the word yes or be or fortune cookie. He'll make, you know, shapes. He's got one that's picture. It looks like a tiny little Buddha sitting inside a potato, and I think the caption is Reps inside potato or something like that. So he's very whimsical and childlike, and whenever I share his haiku with pictures, they always get a good review from people. And I'm gonna read a short essay that I wrote and had published in Frog Pond magazine. It's the Haiku Society of America. I did a short series of unsung heroes, and Paul Reps, one of them, and you'll hear why. And this is Unsung Heroes and the Question of Zen in Haiku Poetry. This is the first one. Both a treasure trove and a can of worms opened when a poet friend gave me two books by Paul Reps, Zen Telegrams and Gold and Fish Signatures. The treasure trove is the phenomenal spontaneity and originality of Reps's haiku, which he avoided calling haiku, along with his playful brushwork calligraphy. The can of worms is that this world traveler, this nomad monk, has been seemingly shunned by the modern haiku community. In all the books on haiku I had read before discovering Reps, he was barely, if at all, mentioned. This is probably because his bent for the avant-garde goes beyond the intellectual, literary, and academic norms that tend to shun childlike spontaneity and meditative states. I had read Reps's classic collection of stories and teaching Zen Flesh, Zen Bones, but why hadn't I heard of him as one of the fathers of American haiku? One of my favorites of Reps, there's the bird, the crane, and then the worm and the stone, and the responses are in quotes. Crane, my way is best. Worm, my way is best. Stone, stone. I'll read it again. And again, they're quotes. Crane, my way is best. Worm, my way is best. Stone, stone. Makes me laugh again just to read it, because it says so much, the crane and worm saying their best, and the stone just says stone. Called variously picture poems, poems before words, and Zen telegrams, in Reps's exhibits, the poems on rice paper of various sizes were scotch-taped only at the tops to horizontal bamboo poles, strung from the ceiling at different levels, and electric fans were made to blow them gently. Reps also studied with spiritual teachers in Asia. One of the best stories I have ever heard about the power of words and art revolves around Reps's haiku, "Drinking a bowl of green tea, I stopped the war." In the early 1950s, Reps, who was in his 40s, had traveled to Japan en route to visit a respected Zen master in Korea. He went to the passport office to apply for his visa and was politely informed that his request was denied. due to the conflict that had just broken out. Reps walked away, sat down quietly in the waiting area. He reached into his bag, pulled out his thermos, and poured a cup of tea. Finishing his tea, he pulled out a brush and paper upon which he wrote a picture poem. The clerk read the poem, and it brought tears to his eyes. He smiled, bowed with respect, and stamped Reps's passport for passage to Korea. Drinking a bowl of green tea, I stopped the war. That's an excerpt from Living in Balance. And the other quote before that was from Zen Telegrams, which I'll get to. And the little essay continues. A haiku is like a bird call, and whether a raucous crow or a delicate chickadee, it can stop you in your tracks and change your direction. Paul Reps was highly influenced by another unsung haiku and haibun hero, Zen Master Soen Nakagawa, who will be the subject of part two in this series. That's the essay series. And that thing about the bird call and the bowl of tea is just the story I love, because he was denied something and he just calmly and quietly sat down, made some tea, and, you know, created the poem, and that it ended up moving the guy to tears, and he was given passage. It's like Moses parting the sea. So it's also just a wonderful haiku about how, you know, even every little action that we do could have have an effect on the world. These Zen Telegrams flap here has called these 79 picture poems, but still they are communications that are more than pictures, more than poems. In the author's words, they are poems before words, pictures before art. They aim at the inner ear, the inner eye, the inner self. Call these Zen Telegrams. And the phrase, one old word, one very much of today word, points to the immediacy and the datelessness of what's here. If Zen works as a sudden flash of insight, so do these, telegraphically, freshly. Who can resist opening a telegram? Any of these 79 may be the one your inner self has been expecting all your life. Or again, perhaps you simply want to belly feel the delightfully illogical logic of life and will find here a trigger for this most satisfying of all laughter. Any reader, be he deep thinker or quiet laugher, is almost sure to find that Reps has here sent him the most awakening and pleasuring telegram he has ever received, plus a whole book of before art. Here's from that the editor's foreword, Meredith Weatherby. When I told him how much I liked a certain one of his pictures, Reps replied, "Tell me about the words, not the ink shapes." For as he has explained, the ink shapes are not for themselves, but for giving another dimension to the words. In a sense, then, he is trying through the medium of these shapes to give the English word some of that pictorial, flashing quality which the ideographs of China and Japan possess in their own right, the quality that breathes magical life into their calligraphy. Quote, "Black brush lines on white space, such as calligraphy, are treasured by the Chinese and Japanese, who feel they receive something of the writer through them. They do not call them art. It is something from the heart. Their calligraphy is picture writing. The character for man pictures a man. Field looks like a field, and river shows as well as says river. Becomes a three-picture poem, with each individual supplying his own detail and interpretation. Since 85% of our sensing comes through our seeing, picturing is primal poeming. With an alphabet language, we are left straining to see, but not seeing, one step removed from the delight of picturing, of a picturing way of thinking. Pictures are before words, in them, inclusive of them. Poems before words would see say, hyphen, poems before words would see say in the same careless way, and thus dip into primal vitality." And the introduction goes on. Reps first started creating his picture poems in Japan in 1952, using them as what he calls weightless gifts, and scattering them among his many friends, old and always new, as he moved about the world. In 1957, a Japanese poet friend to whom he had given a number of them started the first of the Reps picture poem shows. In this Kyoto exhibit, as in all later ones, the poems, on rice paper of various sizes, were scotch-taped only at the tops to horizontal bamboo poles strung from the ceiling at different levels, and electric fans were made to blow them gently. There they fluttered like washing in the breeze, and the scene had somewhat the appearance of moving banners. There was also a sign that read, 1,000 yen each to automobile owners, 500 yen to well-dressed persons, 200 yen to students, 100 yen to anyone poor, 10 yen to lovers of Buddha. No one elected to pay 10 yen, someone has observed, so perhaps each loved himself more than Buddha. But thousands came to read see, and many stayed long. Each always seemed to find some particular one he liked for his own reasons, and reps would give it to him or sell it at the price the buyer chose, and then draw another to hang in its place, sometimes the same one, sometimes a new one. After that, Osaka wanted a show, then Tokyo, then Kyoto again, and now I hear talk of Washington, Honolulu, Rome. The picture poems were televised, newsreeled, radioed, written about, and even reproduced on silken obi in microscopic stitches of silk for elegant ladies. And his creating of the poems still continues, so that I found myself with almost 200 to choose from. To fit the space, I've had to winnow these down to 79. 79 poems. No, comments Reps, speaking both to me and to future readers of this book. Actually, there's only one poem, and that one, too, a weightless gift. Any one is for one person. Like intimate conversation, it is not meant to be seen, heard by others. All this writing and exhibiting and publishing may seem far from one for one, or as near as you let it be. Perhaps, then, perhaps, one of these is for you. Should this be so, you are welcome to take it out of the book and hang it on your wall, knowing it was done for you with delight. Not every day you hear a writer say, tear the page out of the book and hang it up. So I'll read a few of these. And again, not quite as good as with the picture, but it's the best can do on audio. Pine, drinking, luminous dew, as if nothing had happened. Pine, drinking, luminous dew, as if nothing had happened. Potato, seeing, everywhere, below. And glistening wisps of straw, living earth to comfort, living water to heal, living air purify, radiance reveal. And this one has a clothesline with some clothes on it. Washing, dancing, hurry. Brookside, alive. Oh, do not hasten, friend, you may arrive. Born, yet unborningly, reads. That's R-E-E-D-S. Born, yet unborningly, reads. Ants, how thankful I am, with no thing to be thankful for. Upon fallen leaves, a leaf. Let moss be moss. Since men still make war, let me lie down and sing with the grasses. Rocks preaching become some silent sound. So that's a sampling from Zen Telegrams. Oh, here's the one in gold, fish and signatures. Reps hiding in potato. And it's a picture, a black and white brush drawing with a potato shape and then a little meditating figure inside it. Senses, oh, mind. Mind, oh, light, willows, oh, river, river, oh, sea. Yes, silently shouts the bud. Some of the book titles by Paul Reps. Square Sun, Square Moon. Sit in, what is it like? Let good fortune jump on you. Big Bath, poems. Unwrinkling plays. 10 ways to meditate. B! Exclamation point. New uses for the human instrument. Juicing. Words and brushwork. Now, a little bit from the Zen Flesh, Zen Bones. Certainly a seminal book in the transmission of East to the West. Read one Zen. It starts off with the Zen stories. 101 Zen stories. That's a good chunk of the book. And then the Gateless Gate. Some of these, you know, are by other people, and they just put them together or whatever they did. More stories and a section called Centering. And the 10 bulls or 10 oxen, that's the it's like a ten pictures with short stanzas, poetic stanzas with commentary. It's like very much a guided chart for tracking one's progress through the day or through a lifetime. So first a Zen story, because this connects with one of the most well-known koans, The Sound of One Hand. The master of Kenin Temple was Mokurai, Silent Thunder. He had a little protege named Toyo, who was only 12 years old. Toyo saw the older disciples visit the master's room each morning and evening to receive instruction in Sanzen, or personal guidance, in which they were given koans to stop mind wandering. Toyo wished to do Sanzen also. "Wait a while," said Mokurai, "you are too young." But the child insisted, so the teacher finally consented. In the evening, little Toyo went at the proper time to the threshold of Mokurai's Sanzen room. He struck the gong to announce his presence, bowed respectfully 3 times outside the door, and went to sit before the master in respectful silence. "You can hear the sound of two hands when they clap together," said Mokurai. "Now show me the sound of one hand." Toyo bowed and went to his room to consider the problem. From his window, he could hear the music of the geishas. "Ah, I have it," he proclaimed. The next evening, when his teacher asked him to illustrate the sound of one hand, Toyo began to play the music of the geishas. "No, no," said Mokurai, "that will never do. That is not the sound of one hand. You've not got it at all." Thinking that such music might interrupt, Toyo moved his abode to a quiet place. He meditated again. What can the sound of one hand be? He happened to hear some water dripping. "I have it," imagined Toyo. When he next appeared before his teacher, Toyo imitated dripping water. "What is that?" asked Mokurai. "That is the sound of dripping water, but not the sound of one hand. Try again." In vain, Toyo meditated to hear the sound of one hand. He heard the sighing of the wind, but the sound was rejected. He heard the cry of an owl. This also was refused. The sound of one hand was not the locusts. For more than 10 times, Toyo visited Mokurai with different sounds. All were wrong. For almost a year, he pondered what the sound of one hand might be. At last, little Toyo entered true meditation and transcended all sounds. "I could collect no more," he explained later. "So I reached the soundless sound." Toyo had realized the sound of one hand. Yeah, the centering section, gives starts off with Devi, Devi, Devi says, and Shiva replies. Perhaps similar to the Bhagavad Gita with Krishna and Arjuna. And then it goes on to give various techniques of meditation. Feel cosmos as translucent, ever-living presence. Meditate on the make-believe world as burning to ashes and becoming being above human. So there's a variety of these. O Shakti, each particular perception is limited, disappearing in omnipotence. And the 10 bulls, I'll just give the summary. It starts off with the search for the bull, discovering the footprints, perceiving the bull, catching the bull, taming the bull, riding the bull home, the bull transcended, both bull and self transcended, reaching the source, and in the world. So, yeah, maybe a little pun there, but yeah, the bull is also taming one's own, self, one's own mind, one's own restlessness. So, even it's sometimes referred to as the 10 oxen. The gateless gate, again, those are stories. These particular ones end with little poetic quatrains. Uman's sidetrack. A Zen student told Uman, "Brilliancy of Buddha illuminates the whole universe." Before he finished the phrase, Uman asked, "You are reciting another's poem, are you not?" "Yes," answered the student. "You are sidetracked," said Uman. Afterwards, another teacher, Shishin, asked his pupils, "At what point did that student go off the track?" Uman's comment: if anyone perceives Uman's particular skillfulness, he will know at what point the student was off the track, and he will be teacher of man and devas. If not, he cannot even perceive himself. When a fish meets the fish hook, if he is too greedy, he will be caught. When his mouth opens, his life already is lost. So those are a bit more complex than just the stories. They give you various angles to ponder. So this is both a simple and a deep book. Certainly wonderful for learning about Zen and getting some of the experience of Zen. And let's see, at the introduction by Paul Reps, the foreword here, for those into the technicalities, it gives various references to where the stories, The Gateless Gate, The Ten Bulls, where they were first published. Centering is a transcription of ancient Sanskrit manuscripts. So it's really quite a collection. And here's the story behind the title. In the first Zen patriarch, Bodhidharma brought Zen to China from India in the 6th century. According to his biography, recorded in the year 1004 by the Chinese teacher Dogen, after 9 years in China, Bodhidharma wished to go home and gathered his disciples about him to test their apperception. Dofoku said, "In my opinion, truth is beyond affirmation or negation, for this is the way it moves." Bodhidharma replied, "You have my skin." The nun Soji said, "In my view, it is like Ananda's sight of the Buddha land, seen once and forever." Bodhidharma answered, "You have my flesh." Doikyu said, "The four elements of light, airiness, fluidity, and solidity are empty, in other words, inclusive, and the five skandhas are no things. In my opinion, no thing, in other words, spirit, is reality." Bodhidharma commented, "You have my bones." Finally, Ika bowed before the master and remained silent. Bodhidharma said, "You have my marrow." Old Zen was so fresh it became treasured and remembered. Here are fragments of its skin, flesh, bones, but not its marrow, never found in words. The directness of Zen has led many to believe it stemmed from sources before the time of Buddha. The reader may judge for himself, for he has here for the first time in one book the experiences of Zen, the mind problems, the stages of awareness, and a similar teaching predating Zen by centuries. The problem of our mind, relating conscious to preconscious awareness, takes us deep into everyday living. Dare we open up our doors to the source of our being? What are flesh and bones for? So, with that, there is not much more to say, except thank you for listening, and tried to find some bamboo wind chimes or something, but since he lived in Hawaii for a while, go out with the equally meditative and soothing slack string from the well-known Hawaiian guitarist and singer Ray Kane. Yeah. Holy no.
I'm by a